Dispatch to all units, 10-3, 10-33. Clear the air of all traffic and stand by for emergency traffic from your chaplain. Welcome to the Chaplain's 10-33 podcast, a podcast to look at the good and bad of public safety. Join Chaplain Dale Simmons as he talks to police officers, firefighters, EMS personnel, and deputies who struggle every day with life and death situations. Here's your host, Chaplain Dale Simmons.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Chaplain's 1033 podcast. My name is Dale Simmons, public safety chaplain here in South Georgia. And I hope you're having a good week. It's been a little cold down here this week. If you're watching me on YouTube, you can see I'm wearing my hat, keep my head warm. But we'll hang in there in a few days. It'll be back in the 60s and 70s again, just like it is around in the South Georgia area. A couple of things just want to remind you of before we get into the interview today. I do have a weekly blog. It's called 10-Minute ETA. It's just an opportunity for me to encourage you. I promise you, it won't take you longer than 10 minutes to read. So if you're interested in that, hang around to the end. I'll give you some information on that as well. Please rate the podcast if you watch it. It's a way for people to find it if they do a Google search for podcast about public safety. So do that for me. Let me know how you feel. Don't sugarcoat it. Be honest. Tell me what you think about the podcast. If you got some ideas, I'm always open to hearing what you think. Today, I'm going to be interviewing Casey Nash. Now, one of the things you'll hear as I do this interview with her is I make the comment she is not a first responder, and she isn't. She is a veteran of the Iraq War. I heard Casey several weeks ago at an event where she shared just a few minutes about her past and her testimony. And one of the things that she talked about in her testimony was about purpose and how she lost her purpose. And I just feel like that fits in so well with what we deal with in public safety and as first responders, forgetting why we do what we do. And the story, as you'll listen to it, you're going to find and see that a lot of things she deals with in life are a lot of things we deal with as well. I think veterans and first responders have a lot more in common than we give each other credit for as we go through life. Casey, as I said, is a veteran of the Iraq War. She was a transportation specialist. She was in the Army from 2001 to 2012. She is a Purple Heart recipient who was wounded in a suicide bomb explosion. She's married, has two children, and you'll hear her talk during the interview about her struggles being deployed and being a mom. And I think that fits into some of the things that we deal with when our children are young and we're gone every third day or 12 hours on, 12 hours off. It can make it kind of tough. Casey talks about her post-traumatic stress and how it affected all aspects of her life, including even to the point of attempting suicide. So I think you'll enjoy this. It was a lot of fun talking to her. If you want to watch this on YouTube, I am on YouTube, Chaplains 1033, and you'll find this same podcast there, and you can actually watch the interview. So I hope you enjoy it. Here is my interview with Casey Nash. Okay, everybody. Well, good afternoon from where we are today. And if you were in Savannah, Georgia today where we're recording this, it is cold. You know, the 20s for us is cold here. So,
yes.
But I'm glad you're with us today. I'm excited about what we're going to talk about today. Talking to Casey Nash, you know, most of what I've been doing so far is talking about first responders and talking to first responders. It's kind of why I started the podcast, but I'll explain in just a minute. Just so you'll know this, Casey's not a quote first responder. Casey's a veteran, and she's going to talk about that a little bit. But Casey was speaking at an event I was at several months ago, and as she began to talk, and she's going to tell her, I'm sure she'll tell some of her story, but she began to talk about purpose, and she just really got my attention about purpose and why we do what we do. And actually, this morning, I attended a firefighter recruit graduation, and talking about purpose with them, the word wasn't mentioned, but we talked about why we do what we do, and our chief was talking to the recruit. So it really just all fits in line with us getting together today, Casey. So I am so excited about hearing this from you today, and I know our folks are going to enjoy this. We've known each other about 2 or 3 months. We really hadn't talked a whole lot, but about each other and our stories. But tell us a little bit about you and your background, and then we'll get into the purpose stuff as we go along, okay?
Okay, sure. I am from originally I'm from Indiana, and I came here to Georgia by the way, the Army. I was in the Army for 12 years, have 2 children and a wonderful husband, and both my kids were raised military children. All they knew was a deployed mom and a deployed dad, and yeah, so we served during during the Iraq Afghanistan war, the never-ending 20-year war. It still seems to be ongoing because it never fairly stopped for either one of us. My husband's still active duty, and so we still have that thing that's still kind of going on. Both my kids are college age now, and I volunteer with the American Legion, so I work for them. I volunteer for them. So I don't have a job per se, but I consider the American Legion a job. I am a Purple Heart recipient. When I got out in 2012, I kind of lost myself because it was continuously from the time that I got in 2001, prior to September 11th happening, I was in basic training. And then 9/11 happened while I was in basic, and a funny side story. The day September 11th happened, we got to call our families, and I think it was like the fourth time I had ever called my family. And I said, "I did not sign up for this." And my sister said, "Yes, you did." I said, "No, I didn't. I signed up to drive trucks." And she said, "Well, good luck, kid." And from then on out, it's been a roller coaster of a ride. I went to my first news station. They said, "Don't unpack your stuff. You're going to Egypt for 90 days." And from then that point on, it has been a constant go and come home and turn around and go and come back. And so that's the way I've always lived my life. It's been put mission first and family second, and put my purpose as my mission. So when I got out of the military, it was, well, what do I do now? Because I don't have a mission. I didn't quite feel like a mother because I had never really saw my kids or raised my babies. And I know that sounds really bad, but with the military, that's kind of a change that they've had now. And that the our veterans organizations, our VSOs, have fought for military families now is that we make sure that we have time with our children.
I mean that's military life, and it kind of fits in with what we do too, Casey. I mean, if we're scheduled to work Christmas Day, there's no Christmas Day, but
We
you
fit it
signing
in
up for
somewhere.
what you signing up for what you did, means whether it's husband or wife, you're still going to be away from your family, yes?
And that's selfless service. That to me, that's the selfless service on our own lifestyle.
Agreed.
We have that servant's heart, and that's a different mindset. So our families understand, and our families know that our Christmas day will be either before or after, or when we come home.
Right.
And but now, looking back, there was times of doubt of whether I could do it when I got out of the military, in 2012, and there was a lot of lead up to why I joined the American Legion. So back to my purpose and back to why we're talking today. A lot of veterans in that, well, I don't want to say a lot, but okay, well, I don't know how many there are, but there are many veterans out there that deal with inner demons, and I know that firefighters and police officers and first responders go through this as well. that deal with things that they don't want to see, or that we weren't expected to see in our job. We weren't prepared for. They didn't prepare for. And we deal with those differently than the other side of the world, our civilian counterpartners. And we take it and internalize it and let it haunt us in our dreams, or we deal with it when we finish our job or get out of the first responder or service industry, or however, when we finish, because we're constantly in the same mission mindset. So we don't have time to internalize it. And so when we come to that point of either retirement or separation, we lose that sense of mission and sense of purpose. And what I found is that when I got out in 2012, I wasn't ready to deal with my demons and those that things that haunted me. And so I contracted for a year and a half in Afghanistan. So I just left again. I put those demons back in the briefcase back here and decided I'm going to not let them bother me. I'm going to be back on a mission. And then when I got home in 2015, they said, you can't do that anymore. My family said, no, it's time for you to plant your feet back on the ground. And kind of lost a sense of self and a sense of service to my country, and didn't really know what else I was supposed to do. I gave it 6 months, and no one told me what I was supposed to do, and just lost my mind and let them demons try to take over me. And I tried to commit suicide. It was not a pleasant time for me in my life. Thank God I had some good people behind me that didn't let that happen. When I came out of that slump in that dark place I was in, I joined the American Legion, and we had a come to Jesus meeting, several people and myself. And I found a purpose in giving back to veterans in the community and really serving again and in a different light than what I had before. And here I am today, a district commander in the American Legion, hopefully to be able to move up in what I do and still continue that servant leadership and service and still help others find their own purpose as veterans. And even as first responders, we still help with that, the first responder community as well. So that's something that I really look forward to.
So many questions there, Casey. I mean, I love this because you're talking about so many things that we don't talk about. You said you found your purpose in the military and not in your family. And I understand what you mean by that, but that's awful honest, because I know you loved your family. I know you, your children and your husband were there for you, and it's part of life. It's part of what we enjoy. I mean, my goodness, being around my kids and grandkids is, I mean, that's more important to me than Christmas. You know what I'm saying? But for you to say that, what made it so hard? And maybe you can't answer this question. I don't know. What made it so hard that you couldn't see purpose within your family?
So the constant repetitive back-to-back deployments. So my deployment started in 2003. My son was born in late 2002, and I left him at 4 months old. He was just tiny baby, and I didn't have that connection with him. I didn't have that motherly bond when I had to leave. And so when I came home, he was 18, 20 months old. So I really didn't have enough time to spend with him to connect in that infant newborn time frame, because I was still training as well during those 4 months of him being born. And then when we came back home, his dad and I only had joint custody. So I only got to see him every other weekend, every like once or twice a week. Plus I was also training to get ready to go back over to Iraq. And then in 2005, I had my daughter. Same thing happened. I got to spend just a little extra time with her. Then we came home, same age. She was about 20 months old. She had already had her first steps. She had her first teeth. And she had, you know, had already bonded with my in-laws. And it was just one of those things that, like, they had bonded to other people besides me. And when I came home, I felt like I was their aunt, more of a mom. And then, of course, you know, my husband, we were in the same unit together. So that had become, those people had become more of a family because we had deployed, spent so much time together. We broke bread. We ate dinner. We had holidays together. We witnessed death. We prayed. We cried. We laughed. We had stories to share. We had all this history together that wasn't there with other people. I wasn't there with family. We didn't have that to share with our own nucleus. So those became our nucleus. And that was really those people became the founding molding parts of family. What you would consider your blood family, that became my blood family.
Absolutely. You know, two things come to mind. It had to be hard. I'm sure there was shame in there about or guilt about, you know, these are my children. Why don't I feel this way about them? And then there was what's put on you because of what sometimes we expect about family life. And there had to be real conflict for you when you're looking at, these are my children, but they're not my children. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Is that true?
Yeah. So it's like, I had them, but who are they? And I didn't have time to get to reacquainted with them. And then I ended up in Korea for a year, TDY, without anybody. And the only people that I had were two people that I had recently deployed with and my husband. So it was, you know, just that they became this second factor that, okay, they're still there. I see them in pictures. You know, like I have pictures, you know, hey, we got pictures in the mail. Okay, that's my kid. Look, oh, cry for a minute. Okay, great. And then we go on to our mission. And that was it, you know. And then when we...
Go ahead.
And then when we came home, we were stationed at Fort Hood. And immediately when we got to Fort Hood, we were getting ready to leave again for deployment to Iraq. So it was maybe the whole time I was in, I think maybe 4 years, I got to spend that bond time with kids, with the kids at home. And then it was kind of one of those things where maybe it was time for, you know, a change.
So what did you tell yourself, Casey? I mean, you had to tell yourself about what seemed to be normal reality, but was it normal reality for you? I mean, how did you talk to yourself about, oh, these are my children, but I need to be doing this and this is right. But deep down inside, they're still your kids, right? I mean, was that conflict for you there when you were dealing with that?
At the time, I thought it was normal because I watched other women do it alongside. But then when I got out, there was all this kind of, I would see some of my friends that didn't go into the military blast their kids on Facebook. And now we have social media that we had to deal with. And I'm like, man, I'm kind of jealous. I didn't have that. I don't remember doing that with my kids. So it was kind of an internal battle. And that's where it was like in 2015, it was like, I didn't get that. I'm really jealous or I'm really guilty. I didn't have those moments with my kids, or I didn't have that opportunity to share that with my kids. So those were like some turning points for me. But in the moment, I thought it was normal. I thought it was this normal lifestyle that everybody was going through because everybody around me was going through it.
So purpose in the military. I'm Casey Nash, the truck driver who's in, you were in the Army?
Yes, I was in the Army.
Because if you were at Fort Hood, you would have had to have been in the Army. I'm sorry. Yeah. I knew that. So I'm Casey Nash, the truck driver in the Army. I'm serving my country. I'm doing a good thing. That's who I am. And now all of a sudden, you're out.
Yes.
And there is no Army. There's no job. And I, by the way, let me just say this before I start getting emails, okay? Mm-hmm. Whether you're at home with kids or whether you're just taking care of things at home for your family, that's work. I don't care what anybody says. It's work.
And it's one heck of a job when you haven't done
it. It is a job, okay? And I just I watched my wife do that. She was also a nurse. Listen, you don't have to convince me that it's not work, okay?
Yeah.
But it's not what you've been doing. It's not what you felt called to eventually. So was there part of an issue with, I don't know what I'm called to right now. There's no purpose. I mean, and explain, when you say purpose, what do you mean by that word?
So purpose was like, what is my mission in life? Like, what am I supposed to be doing? What am I here for? Because in the Army, you have your routine. You have what I call a battle rhythm. You wake up, this is what you're going to do today. This is what you're supposed to be doing. Everything's like dress right, dress. You wear this, you do this. And when you get out, it's like, whoa, I have all these freedoms. Now what? Really don't have all the freedoms in the world, but you know, you can't go running around crazy, but it was like, I was kind of lost. I didn't know a lot. I didn't know. I got my first job outside of the Army, after I contracted through with the Army. And then I got a job with UPS. I didn't know what FMLA was. I didn't know what PTO was. I didn't know any of that kind of stuff. I was like so lost. And I asked, you know, my family, I'm like, what is all this stuff? What are all these acronyms? I'm like, I need a class for this stuff. And I was like asking my boss, and my boss is like, you're like 40, 35 years old. You don't know any of this stuff. I was like, ma'am, I've been in the Army for so long. I have lost. Please explain to me what is all this stuff? What is HIPAA? Like, what is all this stuff? Like, no idea. She's like, ma'am, we don't know if we're a good hire for this. I was like, okay, sorry. But after a while, you know, I thought I had I thought I could have a job with, you know, there. And then they kind of let me go. And I was like, oh, okay, well, I have all these doctor's appointments. The Army wouldn't have let me go, even though I had all these doctor's appointments. So they ended up letting me go because I had too many medical issues. And then, so I ended up getting 100% through the VA, and, it was just one of those things, like it was a godsend when it happened. But then even though I hit 100% through the VA disability, it still hit rock bottom because I felt useless.
Mm-hmm.
And like without a calling, how am I supposed to help people? How am I supposed to serve others when I've been serving others for such a long time and giving back to other people, even though I was a truck driver in the Army? So we did a lot of humanitarian aid missions in Iraq and through Afghanistan. We gave back to the Afghanis, and we always tried to leave a place better. Our units did. We always tried to leave a place better than what we did. But we had a lot of different things going on during that time.
Do you ever take in a personality profile?
So kind of like the 16,000 questions.
Or have you heard of the Enneagram?
Yes.
Have you ever taken the Enneagram profile?
Yes. So like the eagle, the owl, the dove.
No, but no, this would have been like a number. The Enneagram. I'm a two, which is a helper. You sound like if you took the test, that's where you'd come out at it. So, I mean, I'm just
listening. So they have so many different ones. They have like the ISPV ones, and they have those. So And then they have like the owl, the dove, the parrot, and the eagle one. I bounce between the dove and the parrot because I'm intuitive and I bring new ideas to the table. And I'm also a dove because I'm very patient. Well, not really patient, but I'm very service oriented. But I also have always in bring new ideas to the table.
And I guess for you, the military was a place to serve, and you didn't have to say to them, gee, what are we going to do today? Everything was laid out for you, yes?
No. Yes, everything was laid out, and I really loved that layout part because it didn't mess with my brain. It helped, I guess it hid that ADHD side of my brain. So I didn't have to go, woo. But
So now military's over, and I'm assuming, gosh, I wish you and I would have had some more time to talk. I'm assuming your disability is military related. Is that correct?
yes.
So
So.
all of your disability happened there. So now you're out. You've given your body to the military, and now there's no military.
Yeah.
And then, and I mean, the thought process, well, I gotta work, gotta do something, I gotta get on with my life. I can't sit here and watch soap operas and eat bonbons all day long, and service people like you and me, people ask me all the time, they say, Dale, you're retired, what are you doing? I said, anything I can, because if I sit in this trailer, I'd go crazy. And so I've got to be about something. My kids tell me all the time, you dad, are you sure you're retired? Because of everything I get myself into. Was that part of when the demons started knocking at the door, when you realized,
Yeah.
what do I do with my life now? Yes?
Yes. So in 2015, when I was fired from UPS, I was like, man, well, this sucks. What am I supposed to do now? I just kind of just ooh, went downhill, and I really felt alone. I felt, and even though I had my kids, I had I had my husband, I had all of that. It just felt like I didn't have what was served in like fulfilling. And I know a lot of people are like, well, you still had a family, and you still had this, and you still had that, but I just didn't feel like I was bringing to the table what I should have had. And so let's back up in 2000. Okay, so in 2009, we were on convoy in Iraq, and our truck got hit by a suicide bomber, and the child was about 10 years old. He jumped on the hood of our truck and blew up and killed my driver. And at the time, our truck caught fire, and I had to escape with my driver and all tried to get most of our gear out. And we were also under fire attack, and we trying to skim this down so it's not too traumatic for a lot of people that listen. I was shot in different places, and we had a I didn't feel anything because of my adrenaline. But I also still have shrapnel in my shoulder, up into my left shoulder, into up near my rotator cuff, and then ended up just staying in Baghdad for about 2 weeks for healing and recovery, and then went right back out onto the road after 2 weeks. And then we came home.
Your choice or their choice, Casey, or both?
Both.
Okay.
They needed peat bodies for seats because we were there wasn't enough people to fill trucks in our unit, and so we build bodies for Sikhs. And that was our second deployment out of Fort Hood. And I remember that day till it still haunts me. When in 2015, my son was about the same age as that child. He was going through his adolescent puberty stage, and he smelled like bad. I always used to call it a little Iraqi kid.
Teenage body odor, I get you.
And he would always, I would disassociate a lot when I would, that smell would come. And it would set me to a bad place. And so I had to let him go live with his dad, unless it was during like the summer time or holiday time. And that really took a toll on me, because I hadn't dealt with those demons.
Were you getting any help during this time, Casey? I mean, were you talking to anybody?
Honestly, didn't realize that it was PTSD.
What did you think it was?
I didn't know what it was.
Was it just part of being in the Army? I mean,
yeah, I just thought
bad
it was
things. It was just
a bad day.
Okay. Okay.
I just thought they were bad days, and they would come and they would go. And then, you know, and it was talking to one person, another woman veteran. And she said, no, honey, that's PTSD. That's the way women cope with their PTSD. They have these days and they have these moments, and they have this thing that we have these portions of life. And I took a lot of anger out on both my kids, and I've talked to both of them about it. And I, you know, we've sat down, especially with my daughter, I've apologized to both of them, and they both understand. We went through counseling together, and we've done a lot of different family things together, and we've grown as family now. So we've overcome that portion of life, and I'm a better person because we've done that. But back down to 2015, that's when I hit rock bottom, when somebody told me, no, that's PTSD. And I was in denial. And I was like, no, I don't have that. I don't have that. And then when I saw the VA, they diagnosed me with post-traumatic stress disorder or depression or post-traumatic stress. And they also diagnosed me with anger issues and a bunch of other stuff. And I was like, I don't want any of this medication. I won't take any of it. Just get it out of my face. I don't want it. And here comes a whole big box of medication from the VA shipped to my door. And then the doctor calls and is like, did you get the medication? And I'm like, I'm not taking it. And he's like, no, you need to take it because you'll get better. I'm like, I'm not getting better. Wow. And then it just was, I felt like a pill bottle and no hope. So
did you start taking the meds?
I did eventually, once they got them correct. And
are you sure you're not a first responder? You sound a whole lot like a first responder to me. It's like I said the other day, we were having, and I'll talk to some of our folks. I'm starting to talk to them about the coffee and camaraderie we do once a month, and between the veterans and first responders, and it's here in the Savannah area. But there is so much about what you've experienced and what we go through sometimes in dealing with trauma that's identical. It's the same thing. And I think sometimes we've separated, we say, well, veterans have this problem and first responders have this problem. And it's really not that much difference, is it?
I don't think it's that much different. I think we go through the same thing. I think it's constant for the first responders until they get out. It's the same as we see in deployment. Now we can look at it and say, yeah, we did see that kind of stuff. Looking back, yeah, even as a truck driver, as a woman, you would never think as a woman I would have saw that kind of thing, you know, just random walking up to me on the street. Never would have thought I would have saw that kind of stuff, but I have. And it's a scary thing, you know, even as a, just sitting here today. But there was a lot that we dealt with in our heads. And you know, now that we have I've listened to the doctors and I've listened to how they, you know, tell me that I've changed, I've done a lot better. So in 2015, we had the suicide attempt. And in 2016, I started college. And I was like, well, I don't know what I'm going to do. And then I found this program online. And I was looking at maybe things that I could do with my college counselor. And she gave me that initial, what was it, that aptitude test thing? Personality test.
Personality test.
Yeah, she was like, oh, you're a service type person, but you're innovative. I was like, oh, okay, well. And then ended up getting placed with my service dog. Her name is Zoe. And she and I have been together for 7 years. So we have quite a bond. And she made me think, well, maybe we should open a dog sitting business, because there's a lot of soldiers that deploy, and we could dog sit while those soldiers are on deployment or in the field, and they never have to rehome their dog.
Right.
Because that was one of the things that we would always have to do when we were deployed. We would lose our dog because we were on deployment all the time. And then there was this program of dogs on deployment. And then, but I didn't know anything about business, how to run a small business or anything. And so I went to college for it. And we started and we did really well the first 4 years. And then COVID happened and it closed our doors. And that's when I started getting more involved with American Legion, because COVID did happen. And we started doing buddy checks more and more. We started going out to the veterans' homes, and we just haven't opened our doors back up for the doggy lounge. And I don't think I will, because this is more my purpose than a doggy daycare was ever. This is bones deep.
Yes.
Everybody can see it.
So back up for me just a minute. You just said you hit rock bottom. I mean,
yes.
What was it? What was it, that thing, you know, we talk about interventions where we go and we intervene with someone and we say, you have this issue, you need to deal with it. We bring family in and they finally go, okay. What was your okay? What was that place that where you went? Because you had a choice. You talked about the suicide attempt. Somewhere in there, you had to turn the corner. You had to turn around and say, this life's worth living. I can make a difference. What was it that did that for you, Casey?
So it was the car ride to the hospital. Well, the car ride from the hospital with my husband on the way back after everything was said and done. He says, you have the opportunity to do anything you want. He says, you could go and create whatever you want, and you have an open book. You could write whatever you want to do. And tomorrow you could start a brand new lifestyle. And that's what really like kind of clicked. And he's like, you could go feed the homeless. You could go serve your community. He's like, whatever you want to do, you could do. And I said, oh, maybe I want to help people with their dogs. I don't know. He's like, do it. He's like, whatever you want to do. And then tomorrow, if you want to change that idea, change it. And he's like, but when you get to do something that you love to do and you're passionate about, stay with it. And he's never really been like that before. Like, he's never like hit me upside the head with a book, kind of like philosophy type thing. And when he did, it was kind of like one of those things, like, I'll be there to support you, but figure it out before, because I don't want to support and be like your cheerleader for everything. I want to make sure that you're doing the right thing and cheer you on when you figure it, you know. So when the summer came and we started doing this dog sitting business on a full, he was there to support, and it was going really well. But then of course COVID just kind of cut it all off and
kind of messed with everything, didn't it?
Yeah, but actually it gave me an opportunity. It gave me three opportunities. So it gave me an opportunity to be a mom and really connect with both my kids again. So at that time, when COVID did happen, our son was living here again, going to high school. Both my kids were in, my son was a, he was a sophomore, junior in high school. And I know my daughter was a freshman in high school. And we got to travel a lot. We went to a lot of national parks. We took the dogs. My husband was deployed, so he wasn't home. So I just got to be that mom. And I got to see those times with my kids. We got to do science experiments. We got to do things that we hadn't done in the past that other people might have had time to do with. But I spent every moment I could with them prior to them leaving. We baked cookies. We did things that, you know, might have seemed random to people, but that was my time. And I'm thankful that that time got to happen with them. So
I'm reading this book about leadership, and it talks about how we talk about the balanced life, and that, you know, we're juggling all these balls and trying to keep things balanced. And one of the things the author of the book talks about is that there's no such thing as a balanced life. I mean, if you're at work, you cannot be juggling home while you're at work, and particularly with what military does, what first responders do. I mean, the number of times that Kim would call me at work and we'd be on the phone and the tones would go off and say, gotta go, you know, and, you know, if you're in the middle of, you can't just pick up the phone and call your kids in the middle of Iraq, you know, while something's going on and say, hi, just want to check in. So we don't live a balanced life in the sense that everything stays the same. And listening to you, Casey, what I hear is God giving you a chance with your kids, even later in life, to renew some of that time with them that you didn't have earlier, to rebuild some relationships. Did you have to do a lot of rebuilding after you kind of got that come to Jesus call from your husband at that time? Did you get the opportunity, not just with your kids, but with other family members, to go back and rebuild some relationships?
Some of them, yes. I mean, some of them had already passed away because our family's very old. So like, they're older generations. I'm one of the youngest generations in my family. So without my children, like my children are the last of the lineage in my family. So I'm the youngest in the siblings. So it's very hard. So some of them have already passed away. So it was really hard for me to like, so I did visit their graves and talk to them like through letters and things like that. But I have rebuilt some of those connections, but some of them are so broken that I don't think I'll be able to, but it's okay. And I understand.
So you wrote letters to some of your family members that were gone. I mean, you actually put your feet, and talk about that just a minute, because I think I think to be able to write down some things, and I type a lot, mm-hmm. and a lot of the things I try to blog, not just what I send out to my folks, but I type every day something about what's going on. And if some people call it a diary, it's all electronic for me.
Or journal.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It's a journal. Talk to me about what difference did that make for you to be able to at least say those things to some of the people you love?
So I lost my mom when I was 12. She passed away of emphysema. And I hadn't started a journal for a very long time. And then when I started counseling in 2017, I started writing to her. And I told her things I hadn't told anybody before, just things. And every year I go back to Indiana, I put it on her gravestone, and or I'll sit at her gravesite and I'll take a lighter and I'll just burn it, and I hope that the words and the letters, they'll get to heaven. And then it's like kind of like a spiritual thing for me, just to sit there maybe just for like a few minutes up to 30 minutes, just to not read it out loud, but just to read it in my head and just kind of like let her know that I'm there, that I'm thinking of her, that she's with me. I do believe that every time I deployed, there, I had a guardian angel, because there was some stuff that happened that I didn't even believe that I should have made it out of, or that, you know, my convoy should have made it out of, or people that were around me should have came home from. So there was, I mean, that I believe in angels, and I believe that we have spirits with us and that we're guarded by something, because if we're not, then thank the Lord.
Well, you, I mean, I think, and I know I'm sitting here and I know what I want you to talk about today, but I hear you so much talking about, it's all of that's involved in purpose, and it's not, yes. It's not just my purpose for what I want to do, but I mean, I believe God has a purpose for our lives, and there are things that happen to us that we turn around and look. I mean, in my generation, the only reason you don't know how good or bad I was is we didn't have cell phones. Nothing's recorded.
Social media back then.
There's no evidence to you know, to convict me but there are things in our lives that have happened that we look back on and go, how did we get through that? Why did we not lose our life in those situations? And I mean, even for me, I think meeting my wife, I mean, she was 14 when I met her and I was 16. And I think there are things about that relationship with her that had I not had, I could have gone a different direction. So I think there's purpose involved in that. Why do you think we get lost? What do you have any ideas? And maybe that's a question that's we don't have an answer to, but what makes us get lost from our purpose? Do you have any thoughts about that?
A good question. I don't know. Maybe it's just all kind of a jumbled mess when we don't have when we lose our routines of life. Like, we are so set on one routine that we're so set on a routine that we have every day, and then all of a sudden it's not there anymore. It's like taking the same way home, and then we move, and then all of a sudden we've lost our way home, and now it's not there anymore. So how do we get home?
What part does trauma, you think, plays? I mean, because that's a big thing for military and for first responders. Does trauma play a part in getting us off our purpose?
So the way that I describe it is, like I just said, like how we lose our purpose. It's kind of like when we move from a house to another house, and then we have to take a detour. Well, those trauma incidences that we have are our roadblocks, our closed roads. And so for with me, I have blackout portions. So those are closed roads that I can't take anymore. Or like, we don't remember what they were. So recently, my daughter and I took a trip to Colorado Springs. That's where we were first stationed at. She was born in Fort Carson. We spent 5 years there. We deployed twice from Fort Carson. And I didn't remember the house address that we lived in when we were there, but I could remember how to get there, but I didn't remember the address for the life of me. I just knew how to get there. And my daughter was astonished. I was like, it's just the trauma that doesn't let me remind me the address, but I know the route on how to get there. Or I don't remember this road being here, or I don't remember this, or I don't remember that guy's name, but I remember his face. Or I don't remember this person at all. Like, I don't remember her. I don't remember that person. Oh, they remember me, but I don't remember them.
This is probably more old school. At least it needs to be old school. We used to see bad things. We'd have a bad accident, or you would have an issue where y'all were under enemy fire and somebody is killed, and maybe it's very gross and gruesome looking. And what we would do is we would take the young kids over and say, you need to look at this so you'll know what it looks like. Okay. And one of the things we figured out is we don't need to see trauma until we see trauma. I mean, you know, which we don't have to go look at it early in our career so that when it happens to us, we know what it looks like. When it happens, it happens. And I think sometimes we force trauma on people in our environments as military and first responders when we don't do anything but just cause havoc by making them see it too early in their career. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think that's correct. I believe that too. I don't think, but I think we need to see something to let us know this is what you can expect so we don't freeze, so we can still have that fight or finish, not freeze, but fight and finish. Or fight or continue mode. If you're a medic, if you're a paramedic, you're able to continue to do your job and not have to worry about, you know, you panicking and freezing up. There was a car accident. For example, my children, we were in a there was a car accident in front of us at our intersection out here in the out front of our house, and my kids were like, you didn't even freeze, Mom. You didn't even freeze. And I was like, that's my training. That's how we were trained, because we understand that if we freeze, it's somebody's life. It's somebody's, somebody could die. And that's kind of how our missions were in Iraq and in the military. Somebody's life could be at danger, you know? And that's how I still think when we deal with veterans and we go do buddy checks or we go check on them, or even if we call them, you know, somebody's life can be a danger. There's always that risk of somebody's in that dark place still, and we still need to, you know, continue to communicate and reach out and be better than we were yesterday.
You're just insistent on keeping the going back to that purpose thing, aren't you? Because I hear that. I'm agreeing with you. If we train to care for people, then that becomes our purpose. And the environment, although it may play with what we see and we have to walk through it, the environment doesn't decide. Help me out here and tell me if I'm wrong. The environment doesn't decide our purpose. What decides our purpose is what we train to do and what we think is important in our lives. The environment's going to come whether or not the purpose is there or not. But if we have decided on our purpose, then in most cases, environment should not affect that. Is that fair?
That's fair. Very fair. I can't, and I know myself, I can't sit behind a desk and do paperwork all day. I'm not a finance officer. I'm not an analyst. I'm not a person that's sitting behind a desk all day. I'm not a behind the scenes type person. I'm a person that needs to do just maybe a little bit of paperwork, a little bit of computer work, and then I need to go check on people, because that's the type of person I am. I'm a boots on ground type of leader. I need to be that person that helps others. And I'm also the type of person that will help other people come up with new ideas, or help other people with ideas that will help better them and their company, or their, you know, bring in new people or whatnot. So,
yeah. And I think, and as I hear you say that, and I know you don't think this, but there, if it weren't for those paperwork people, you wouldn't have had fuel in your truck. You wouldn't have had anything to carry somewhere, because if somebody wasn't doing that part of the mission, if their purpose wasn't that, then you and I couldn't do what we do as helpers and what we do. True?
Very true. Very, very true. And so, I just know I'm not that type of person, but there is that type of person out there, but that's not my purpose. But there is somebody out there that has that ambition to be that, but that's not me. But when I build a team around me, like as a leader, I know now I need to make sure that all these spots in my wheelhouse are full, because I know my strengths and I know my weaknesses. And it's taken a long time, almost 10 years, for me to learn that, all right, this isn't me, but this is where my strengths are. So where are my weaknesses that need to be filled, and how can we get there as a team, and how can we do this together? And there are some times where I'm a bit brash, and a lot of the spouses that are on the civilian side are like, we don't say things like that. I'm like, hold on, it didn't really quite mean it like that. Forgive me, I have a military, I'm strictly military, forgive me. It's about this, not, I don't try not to come off as an a-hole all the time, but when we talk
in the midst of the understand. In the midst of the fray, we can't always say please and thank you in the midst of the fray. We've got I mean, sometimes we come off that way too. So tell me about Casey Nash today. I know we've talked about your purpose, but where is Casey Nash the person today with everything she's experienced?
Great question. So today I am in the American Legion. I am a member of Post 184. I am a district commander of the first district. And that means I just have about, I think it's 22 counties that I am. I oversee 17 American Legion posts that I oversee, and they each have post commanders of their own. And then I also have I think it's 2,500 veterans that I'm a voice of. So when we go to bigger meetings at the state level, I voice their concerns at the state level. And then when we go to national, we are able to talk to the national, at national level, our department commander will be able to talk or us at almost a 60,000 veteran level voice. So we do have, different things that we work upon. We help veterans with emergency grants. We do also help veterans with their children and their youth. We have programs that we do for like Flag Day, Veterans Day, and Memorial Day. Casey Nash as a mom, we have two kids. One's in college. He is at Purdue University.
That's great.
Yes, he's going to school, and he's also got a job. So we're really proud of him. And then we also have, my husband is deployed right now, so he's still active duty. And then my daughter, she's hopefully getting a job here in the next couple days, and she's just hanging out at home, taking her year sabbatical. I call it sabbatical, her year off from between high school and college, so just to enjoy life. So we did some traveling over the Thanksgiving break, and we went out to Colorado and came back I-40 East, saw the cool things out there out west, and just came back and had a good time.
So Casey's found her purpose?
Part of it. I don't think my story's done yet. So
okay.
I think there's more to be wrote. I want to give other people, I strive to give other people, strive to help other people see that they have a purpose too. This past weekend, I had a friend come. She's a Legionnaire as well, and she was kind of down on herself, and she said, I found my purpose again. She said, I really enjoyed being around you and seeing your enthusiasm and seeing how enthusiastic you were, even though there were some difficulties to navigate around, you navigated them with grace and you were humble about the things that you were up against. And she said, you just did it so elegantly that it made me want to embark on a future with the American Legion and be leadership. And that made me know that I'm in the right place right now, because there's, even though there are women leaders in the American Legion, there's not too many of us in the Department of Georgia or in the state of Georgia that are in a role model position currently right now in the state of Georgia in leadership. So I'm one of two in the top positions right now. So we're spearheading a big, big thing.
So still good days and bad days. Yes.
Yes. Yes. Speaking of good days and bad days, I had two bad days yesterday. Just everything irritated me and didn't want to really do anything. So I took those days and just kind of self-reflected and journaled a lot, slept a lot, and just didn't really bother with too many people and made sure we had a good mindset trying to go into, you know, the next few days.
So I got one more thing I want to ask. Because of what you do and because of what I do, we hear the hearts of a lot of military and first responders who are struggling, you know, that are coping with, I can't do this anymore, or I love this, but I don't love it anymore, or I'm really struggling with family. And I mean, you know, for me, and I know for you too, it's not just military. For us, it's not just work, it's home too. I mean, I don't want to just be somebody to help them get through their profession. I want them to be successful, totally. Okay. So the phone rings. It's maybe or maybe not somebody you know, and they're just really, may not be at the bottom, but they can see the bottom coming, and they're just really discouraged right now. Casey, I'm not sure what to do next. Help me out. What's my next step? Help me out of this hole. Would you talk to somebody for just a minute and let's encourage somebody to this? I mean, there's something better. Yes.
Yes, there is. There's always something better. I call it donuts and coffee. I don't call it a crisis moment. I ask them where they are. I typically go pick up either Dunkin' Donuts, a six pack of Dunkin' Donuts and two coffees. I don't drink coffee. And I'll ask them what their favorite coffee is. If they like coffee, if they don't like coffee, I'll ask them what their favorite soda is. I'll typically pick up, like I said, half dozen donuts and whatever they like to drink. And then I'll just go over and I'll sit with them until they feel better. If they're local, if they're not local, then I'll sit with them on FaceTime, like we're doing right now on Zoom or FaceTime. Or if I can get with them within 4 hours, I'm going. I've done that. And it's important to be there in person, because I feel like it's that human connection to where I can touch your hand, or touch your shoulder. It's that connection to where I can give you a hug and know that somebody else besides your family, your friends, your mentor, whatever, is there just to be there for you. And I've had several people just call me and say, hey, my friend's not doing good. Can you come and talk to them? And I'm like, yeah, what do they like to drink? I'll be there in about an hour. I've actually left Jekyll Island and drove all the way to Savannah and done that. And it's helped the guy out really well. And we're still as close as night and day. And we weren't that close at that time. And I wouldn't have changed it for the world. I've got his back every single day. And, you know, there are more people out there that I wish would reach out and, you know, contact us, even if it's on Facebook. Hey, I have a situation. Can you just, you know, talk to me for 5 minutes? Or anybody, just reach out to us, because those 5 minutes are what our slogan is all about. Be the one. That's what our campaign is about. That's why we say be the one. That's why I always say hashtag be the one on my Facebook posts. It's more be the one, give 5 minutes. It can save a life. And then you're changing lives too. If you save a life, you change a life. And it keeps those ripple effects from not happening. Those negative ripple effects from not happening. And I always think about, you know, if I would have taken my own life, where would my kids be now? How would they what would their life look like now? Because those lives change dramatically. Because there's always a cause and effect for everything. There's always two steps that we don't see, you know, and it sucks if somebody, it hurts and it's traumatic and it really sucks when somebody does take their own life, because there's those outward and ripple effects that nobody else knows about when they do take their own life, and it hurts. And we don't even know the people that we hurt when we do things. So it's all about those other effects, you know?
We help a life by listening, and you know, we could talk about this, but it's just, we don't have the answers. We're not there to come with the answers. We learn, we train, we learn how to deal with these issues. That's really important. But we're not going in with all the answers. We're there to be with the person. But here's something that I see in you, which also helps keep us out of the hole, is that when we help a life, even if it's just listening, we're changing two lives. We're changing theirs. But what does that do for Casey Nash when you see somebody look at you and say, "Hey, Casey, thank you for talking to me today. Thank you for spending some time with me." What does that do for Casey, not only right then, but for the purpose aspect as well? Does it changes, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does. It doesn't, I'm not going to say it gives me a fulfillment of peace. And I won't say joy, because that's not a joyful occasion, but of peace. That I have left with someone, that they're not, that they are better with themselves, that they're better with their own conscience, that they can really satisfy their themselves, and that they can live another day.
So what does that do for Casey's purpose when you see that happen?
It gets stronger. Yeah.
You want to do it again, don't you?
Yes.
One of the things that it's a struggle sometimes to get set up so that we can do what you and I've done today, and so getting it set up, it can be a little frustrating. I can't do it this day, you do it that day. But every time I sit here and talk to somebody, or I interview somebody face to face, I go, I remember why I'm doing this. That relationship, that purpose that you see in others, just makes it all worthwhile. Anything we hadn't talked about?
Mm-mm.
All right. I so much appreciate this, Casey. I'm hoping maybe some military will listen to this, but I'm really hoping our first responders will get into this. What you've been through and what we go through is so much intertwined, and you know, we need each other. I remember speaking at that coffee and camaraderie and talking about how what you guys have been through and what we've been through is the same. And I remember, as I said that, everybody in the room shaking their head up and down, and, you know, and nodding in agreement. And it is. And I think maybe something I'm learning, I've missed something that I've learned in the last probably year, of some people I had that are in my team that I didn't know were on my team. And that's the veterans. And that's for us to be able to do this together just makes us that much stronger. So thank you for today. I really appreciate everything. And maybe we'll do this again later on when things change. Okay.
Yes. Yes, awesome. I'd love to.
Thank you, Casey.
All right. Have a good one.
You too. Well, I hope you enjoyed the interview. It was exciting to me to hear Casey's story, how she lost her purpose and how she found it again in serving people. She and I are both servers in life and helpers, and so felt a lot in common as she shared some of her story. So let me know what you think. Hit me up at chaplaindalesimmons@gmail.com. Let me know how I'm doing. I want to talk to you just about a few things. I promise I'd let you know about my blog. It's called 10-Minute ETA. It goes out every Monday. As I said, it takes less than 10 minutes to read it. if you're interested, if you'll just email me at my email address and just put in the subject line or in the body, just put 10-minute ETL, add you to the list. You'll see every week when it comes. If you want to unsubscribe, it's just simple to press the button. But it gives me an opportunity to encourage you to talk to you about some things that I think are important. If you go to my website, chaplains1033.com, you'll find all the past blogs there. You can read of some of the previous ones and see some of the things I've been talking about. My Chaplains 33 podcast and the nonprofit is a nonprofit. And for that, we do solicit funds. What I have done so far up to this point has come out of my pocket. I have no complaints about that because this is something that I desire to do, and it's a way to help you and make you successful. But if you'd like to help me in this, you can send donations to 116 Sunshine Avenue, Lot 4, Savannah, Georgia, 31405. I do have a PayPal account set up. It is a nonprofit, so it's tax deductible. Hopefully by the end of this next week, I will have my Venmo account set up, and you may contribute that way as well. And so anything you give does not go to me. It goes to providing snacks for first responders in this area. If I get the opportunity to do it, provides for me to get things to give away to be able to just encourage people. Doing a podcast does cost a little bit. My platform's free, but there's lighting and equipment that I need to make this happen. And sometimes it goes into that. I am transparent. If you want to know where I'm going, what's happening, we got news asked. I'm not hiding anything. And I want you to feel like that if you contribute to this, it's going to go worthwhile. And it's going to be for first responders. So enough said about that. I want to do a few page outs. I started this a couple of podcasts ago, and I want to try to get back into this again. First page out goes to the new recruits of Chatham Fire Department, Chatham Emergency Services. Last week had the opportunity to have a family night with them and their families to talk about public safety life, to help their families and spouses know what to expect as they get involved in the fire service. This past Thursday, recording this on Friday. This past week, yesterday, I was able to attend their graduation. They're getting ready to hit the floor as new recruits and new firefighters. And it was exciting to see them get started. Bunch of young men who I hope will have the opportunity through us encouraging them and teaching them about mental health, have an opportunity for a long career. One of the things that was said multiple times during the graduation was those of us who spoke was about the way we love our job, we love our profession, and it's a calling. One of our fire chief even made that comment that it's a calling, it's not just a profession or a job. So congratulations to them, looking for a long career. I did get the chance to talk with them about mental health and share with them and encourage them and let them know there's help out there if they need it. I want to do one more shout out to my friend and the lady who makes a lot of stuff possible for me. Her name is Bonnie Witherington, and she has a company called So Be It. She does monogramming, she does mugs, she does hats. And if you watch me on YouTube, I've got a picture here of my one of the mugs that she makes for me. It's got my logo on it there. These are real quality mugs. It keeps coffee really, really warm. And she also makes me some hats. I'm showing you the hat right now. It's got a little faux leather front on it with my logo on it. She has been very gracious to help me with this. Another thing, she does monogramming for me for polo shirts and shirts that I can wear with my logo on it. So if you're in the South Georgia area and you need some monogramming done or some specialty item made, she call her and ask her. She does so many things, and she's just a wonderful person. You can call her at 912-484-6766 or email her at bonniesewit@yahoo.com, BonnieSewit, bonniesewit.com. bonniesewit@yahoo.com. I'll get it right in just a minute. So thank you to Bonnie for all she does for me and taking care of me. And getting some stuff out that I can share with you and be able to give away to to just encourage people. Hope to see you again soon. I'm working on some other podcasts. Not sure what's coming down the pike right yet, but as soon as it does, I'll try to let you know. I am on Facebook and Instagram, Chaplains 1033. Try to post on there when something new's coming up. You know, when you like the podcast and subscribe, then every time a new one comes out, it pops up on your platform, whatever you're using. So be careful out there. I pray for you. Every time I see an ambulance, a law enforcement vehicle, or any kind of fire apparatus, and pray for your safety. I want to encourage you, not just in your profession, but in your family life as well. Your presence on this earth makes a difference, whether you see it or not. Are you listening? You matter.